fresh off the block. I'm getting mine everywhere I go. If they don't know, call me nice or not. Fresh off the block. Call me down, know where I come from, but I know where I'm going. I'm fresh off the block.
Fresh Off the Boat is the first network television show to portray an Asian American family in the last 20 years. In this scene, the mom, Jessica, has just come home to find her sons making quesadillas on the ironing board after school. And she has big news for them. She's begrudgingly directing the school play.
Oh, yay!
Me and Evan are in the play.
You are? Why? You're not going to become actors. You think they're going to put two Chinese boys on TV? Maybe if there's a nerdy friend or a magical thing where someone wanders into a Chinatown, but no.
The play is fun.
Let me tell you a story about fun.
Self-referential much? I'm Gina Kaufman, and today's Central Standard is a Screen Time episode all about Fresh Off the Boat. Eddie Wong, whose memoir inspired the series, has publicly disowned the television version of his life and family. He says the network has whitewashed his story and made his family all American in ways they simply were not. And yet, viewers are really enjoying the fictionalized Wong family. Many are even calling it a milestone for Asian Americans. So let's get into it. My guests this morning are Peter Chung, local actress Andy Meyer, and our resident critic Russ Simmons. We'll start with each guest's capsule review. Just a basic, I like it, I can't stand it. You get the idea. Peter Chung, partner with the law firm Benton Lloyd & Chung. What do you think of Fresh Off the Boat?
I do like the show. I also agree that it is probably whitewashed to some degree, but that doesn't necessarily interfere with my enjoyment of the show to some level. So,
Andy Meyer is an actress, and she's also the producing artistic director of Pan Asian American Artists of Kansas City. Andy, what are your thoughts on the show?
I agree with Peter. I love it. I think it's great that finally, after 20 years, there's another Asian American family on television.
It's so crazy. 20 years is a really long time.
It's a really long time.
Russ Simmons, as a film critic with an eye toward craft and narrative, what's your review?
You know, I like the show as well. I think that it has a odd, absurdist point of view that kind of exists in that rarefied sitcom world that that's in another alternate universe. But if you can tune into that sense of humor, which I have, then you'll really enjoy it.
If you've been watching Fresh Off the Boat, we'll want to hear whether it rings true for you later in the show. But let's quickly establish the basics. The main character is Eddie. He's 11. He's a chubby kid who's obsessed with hip-hop culture. He's an outsider at home, where he doesn't quite live up to his family's expectations, and at school, where his authentic Asian lunches draw horrified stares from his white classmates. He has two younger brothers, Evan and Emery. They're adorable and perfect. His dad, Lewis, owns a Western steakhouse, and his mom, Jessica, is tough but funny. The year is 1995, and the Wongs have just moved from Chinatown in D.C. to Orlando, Florida. Anything important I'm leaving out, guys? Or does that kind of set it up for us?
I think that covers it.
Well, it seems like a lot of the discussion around this show comes down to a tension between showing that Asian American families are just like other families with the same dynamics and struggles and being honest about the things that set that experience apart. How do you think the show does on that?
I think it does a good job in showing certain things about Asian families.
Like what?
Obviously, you'd start with the mother. There's always the Asian mother, very tough, very driven to have her children succeed. That's generally what, at least for me, drove my mom's focus, get A's, go to school, do well, look for your career type of things. In the same vein, I think to the point of where they're trying to make the show funny, the characters can become a little bit caricatures. Maybe a little bit overdrawn, and maybe that's where Eddie Wong thinks he's getting whitewashed. The grandma, she's just basically there as kind of a comedy piece to me, type of thing.
What makes her a comedy piece? Like, what are the? Can you think of the kinds of moments you're getting at?
Pretty much, most of the moments she has, she's not really a grandma, right? She's like a comedy piece. She's just there to play the intro music when Eddie walks in. You know, she's the one making fun of the moms at the pool or the people at vacationing at the pool. You know, she gets a dreadlock hair tuft. I mean, it's really nothing that I myself would relate to an Asian grandmother. Honestly.
The thing that you're describing when the intro music happens, Eddie does this thing. He loves hip hop and he'll play a song and he'll kind of like walk in doing a lot of posturing and strutting when he's got a big announcement to make, like that he got a good grade on a report card. Somewhat unexpectedly, things like that. And he sends his grandma in a wheelchair with his little boombox.
Right.
And that's, do you think that Eddie being maybe not the stereotype offsets that in any way?
Yeah. I think to some degree, and I'm saying as a stereotype, I just don't think the grandma really has many qualities about an Asian grandma. So, you know, in terms of the stereotypes in the show, I mean, it kind of goes back and forth. I mean, each character probably has some degree of truth to them, but they also have a point where I don't think it's totally accurate, which, you know, makes it hard for me a little personally. When I watch the show, I watch it differently. Like when I watch Arrested Development, I don't think, oh, this is a white family in America. This is totally what they're like. But when I watch this show, I'm like, would my mom really do that? Would my dad really do that? I mean, it's a harder degree for me to watch. At least at first.
There's a lot of pressure on it being the only show to have depicted an Asian American family as the focus in so long. I mean, that it, yeah, has to live up to, in some ways, everyone's family.
Right. And I think that's heightened by, you know, Eddie Wong actually, you know, having so many issues with the show afterwards. And I think that brings a lot of attention to the material and how it depicts an Asian American family because he has so many problems with the show, I think.
Andy, what are your thoughts about walking that line between depicting the Americanness of Asian American families and the particularity of Asian American families?
You know, I do agree with Peter on things, especially with the grandma. I was thinking about that yesterday, as a matter of fact, watching, kind of reviewing to be able to talk about it. She really is the kind of clown and comedic relief character out of all of them. They've all got funny moments. But, you know, you have to balance when you create any kind of performance. I'm sure Russ can speak to this as well. You've got to go back and forth between an archetype or a stereotype, because all performance has to have some kind of archetype or some kind of, you know, everyman, John Q. Public, or, you know, the funny neighbor, the best friend, the leading man. You've got to have those kinds of figures, otherwise it's a formless blob. And so to balance that with these really new people that America and the audience of ABC is experiencing as Asian Americans, it's kind of a hard line to walk. It's kind of a hard line to walk.
Can you think of moments where you think it walks it really well?
Well, I think in general, just putting them in Orlando, you know, Eddie's character is the only Asian kid in school. And I think for a lot of us, especially people in the Midwest, that's a familiar event. You know, a lot of us are like the only one, the only other in that school. And that's, you know, very realistic. You have the competition between minorities. I think this was in the pilot episode where Eddie and the only African American kid in school were kind of competing for who's going to be at the bottom of the totem pole. And that does play out in your everyday dynamics.
Is that just a 1990s thing, or do you think it's
No, I think that still happens. That definitely still happens, especially if you think about, you know, all the social upheaval that we've had in the last year or two. There's still a lot of that goes on.
This show actually references a lot of other family shows in kind of sly ways. There's a Wonder Years element to it with Eddie Wong doing the voiceover as an adult looking back on his childhood until this season, that is.
Yeah, that's right. And also it's similar also in some ways to Everybody Hates Chris. Chris Rock, you know, recalling his childhood in a, you know, in an absurdist way. And he's doing the narration as well. But to my way of thinking, the sense of humor this otherworldly sense of humor reminded me of Scrubs, because Scrubs had this thing where it was totally off, there were things that were totally off the wall, and that's sort of what they're embracing here as well. I try not to criticize movies or TV shows for what they aren't, you know, and instead try to look at what they are. But in this case, I was kind of hoping that they had really taken that fish out of water dynamic and run with it in a real way, in a more real way, because as Peter was pointing out, you know, the grandmother, she's just playing the stereotype. So it would have been really interesting and funny to see how she would have reacted in real life.
There is, when you talk about off-the-wall humor, I think about a scene in a video store where the Eddie character wants to create a distraction so he can steal a dirty movie.
Yes.
And he asks his younger brothers to create a distraction. So one drops and starts doing push-ups, and the other starts throwing raisins and is yelling, "Raisins, raisins, they used to be grapes." It is so, like, random. And that's kind of the style of the humor. And I think actually where the show at times really excels, just that it catches you totally off guard with this weirdo stuff
right. That
has nothing to do with anyone's culture. It's
right. Just...
weird.
It is just weird. And, you know, it's funny, when I tweeted last night that I was going to be doing this show on this subject, one of the responses that I got was, "I love that show. It's so politically incorrect." And, one of the things that appeals about it is that it's pushing that envelope, as well as the fact that it's probably offending people because it's pushing that envelope.
Do you think that the political correctness people are talking about has to do with when the Asian American characters, in the privacy of their family especially, are talking about white people?
I don't know. Somebody else should probably take that.
I would guess there's probably an element of that. There's always kind of that, two-edged sword. I know in my law firm, my other partner's Korean and the other one's African-American, and we can talk amongst ourselves and make jokes that, you know, we couldn't do in other settings, you know. And I think there's always that, why can they talk about white people and we can't say the same thing about them? I mean, there's always kind of that. And I'm not saying that's necessarily what people think, but I think there is truth. I can say things that, Gina, you probably couldn't say, and I could probably be forgiven it to some degree because I am Asian American.
Yeah.
And if you said it, they'd be, racist, blah, 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 you know.
But you can't make the Jewish jokes I can make.
Well, I think even on Blackish, I don't know if anyone watched that show, you know, the last episode they had a chart where they could use, you know, the forbidden word and who could use it in what senses and things like that, so...
Part of the trouble that I think this runs up against is that we have this idea collectively that there's such a thing as the Asian American experience, and maybe there is to some extent. I'm not the judge of that, but there's also has to be room just in a real world thing for individual families like the Wongs to be totally unique and have their own stories. Is that hard to negotiate? Do the Wongs, given the history of Asian Americans on television, owe it to their audience to ring true?
I think in many ways, yes. And I think for a lot of Asian Americans, there was a lot of expectation and hope that this series, after 20 years, was really going to start setting one foot in front of the other and you know, really helping to move things forward. And I really think it has. Definitely.
I've read up on Eddie Wong's critique of the show, and it's really multifaceted. He makes what I think is a very astute point, that in his memoir, he shows white families through this young Taiwanese kid's eyes, which makes white America look foreign and exotic in the same way that Asian America can be treated when you're looking at it in the opposite direction. Do you think the show does flip the script in any ways, or do you think the script is still, this is that foreign family?
No, I would tend to agree with the latter. I think it's still more this is this Asian family, not necessarily flipping the script. To a point Russ made earlier, I think it would probably be a better show to me if it was more of that assertive view, you know, this, you know, make it kind of an unreal situation when we're looking at a white family or we're looking from Eddie's eyes, to even add more absurdity to it to kind of make that point, I think would probably be a little, it'd be better for me. I kind of like that humor more anyways, but...
There's a scene in the memoir, which I guess was supposed to be in the show, but Eddie's objections, real life, Eddie's objections to how it was handled caused it to be cut, ultimately. There's a scene where Eddie, in the memoir, is seeing macaroni and cheese for the first time, and he is horrified because he thinks that, first of all, it looks weird, and second of all, it smells gross, but also it has an appearance that leads him to believe he's looking at chopped up intestines. So he's just horrified. And then the kid whose house he's visiting is sort of equally shocked that Eddie's never seen macaroni and cheese. And in the television show that was screened for Eddie, he saw the scene portrayed, but without that setup. So it was just the other kid being shocked that Eddie's never seen macaroni and cheese. And Eddie Wong really objected to this, wanted more setup. They said, great, we'll work on that. We'll give it more setup. And then it was cut. And he was disappointed because when he toured with his book, that was a scene that especially young people in the audience really responded to. But I was wondering if the mom, Jessica, looking at her white neighbors who all kind of are made to look a lot alike and saying, are you guys all related to each other? And they kind of laugh at her. Does that succeed in a way, in a smaller way in doing that, or is it not enough?
I got it. When I saw that, I got it. I don't know how much of the audience would have gotten that. Do you guys think?
I mean, do you think that exoticizing white America is an important part of this, should be an important part of this show?
Well, I do have to say that I think it is important to keep that kind of thing in perspective. It's interesting because I was just in the last month working on a show that had to do with Tibetan Buddhism, and somebody who was commenting on it said, you know, you have to think about there's a lot of a real mystic element to Tibetan Buddhism. And I think that is really kind of exoticizing it. There might be some sort of mystical element when you think about the idea of reincarnation and rebirth and the recognizing of the Dalai Lama in a child a couple years after the Dalai Lama has passed away. There is that, but at the same time, you know, Christianity really does have the same thing. You have Jesus who died and, you know, to some people they might consider that he was reborn. He walks on water. He changes water into wine, things like that. So it's very similar.
So there's a mystical element in all belief systems, probably.
Yeah.
Yeah, this... you know, we were talking just a minute ago about this idea of Eddie's story having, to a large degree, to do with making inroads with the other kids at school. And Andy, you've said that you can relate to this idea of being the only Asian kid in
mm-hmm.
school.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was born in Hawaii and lived there when I was very young. And then we moved to the Midwest and I ended up going to high school and starting college in North Dakota. So we went from one extreme where I was surrounded by Asians, Hawaiians, Caucasians. I mean, you name it. It was completely different than North Dakota. So, yeah, you know, and if people see two Asian people in the same place, they wonder if you're related or are you together? Maybe we are, maybe we are not.
Yeah, maybe we just met this morning.
Right.
Peter, what about you? Where did you grow up in?
I grew up in Omaha, Nebraska. I was born in New York. I lived there for about 8 months. Don't remember much about it, obviously. My parents both immigrated from Korea in about 1967. So it's similar to North Dakota, I think, probably. Demographically, we might have had a few more Asians than up there, but I think it's pretty similar to there, or even to Kansas City to some degree, where, you know, there's maybe two or three of us at school.
Yeah.
Where I went to.
So this idea of being sort of in the minority at school, how did that affect just your perspective on the environment you were in or the friendships you were building?
You know, it's kind of hard at first, I think. You know, there's always some kids or, you know, just mean kids, right? And honestly, for me, you know, I'm just trying to fit in, you know, type of thing. I didn't probably even recognize, you know, I'm Asian in a way. I'm just another kid going to school, whereas this you know, obvious difference between me and some other kids who, you know, didn't necessarily matter to my friends who I, you know, grew up with or I'm close to. But in terms of there's other kids out there who are just, you know, kids and mean and do whatever. So, you know, there's certainly an artificial barrier, I think, that you become aware of pretty early. And honestly, it's hard to understand at that point. So,
yeah.
And going back to a point you made earlier, kind of about, you know, the culture clash, I'm not sure the show really plays it up as much as I think it was probably out there. It's kind of like...
So, like, the reality is more extreme?
Yeah, I think in ways. I mean, it's obviously a sitcom, and that's one thing I should throw in. I don't... Because it's an ABC sitcom, I don't really have high expectations of it being, you know, a true-to-life show like you might see
on a deep rumination on race in America.
Right. So, but, I mean, the conflicts in the show about not fitting in, not getting along with your mom, they're resolved in a sitcom sort of way, which, you know, is sort of the difference between real life and, you know, watching this show kind of comes into play. It's like, you know, my issues with my mom never settle that quickly, right? You know, she still talks nicer to Eddie than my mom ever talked to me until I was up to, like, you know, 30-something years old, you know, in terms.
There's an episode where a new kid named Philip shows up. He is also Asian, and everyone, including Eddie, assumes that the two are going to have a lot in common. In this scene, Eddie's been called to the principal's office.
I've chosen you to be a first-day friend for a new student. Show them around the school, teach them the ropes.
But I've only been here for a few months.
More than enough time. Plus, I think you and the new student, Philip, might have some things in common.
Like what?
Let's just say I feel like you have mutual interests and experiences.
He's Chinese, isn't he?
What? No. Is he? Gosh, I'm not sure. Let's... Shauna, could you send in Philip?
Sure. Which one is he? There's a few kids out here.
You know, Philip.
I'm gonna need more than that. What does he look like?
Well... Philip is here to meet Eddie Huang. Huang.
Principal Hunter, if you could be more specific, I can get you what you need.
Here's an idea. Just say the name Philip and whoever stands up, send him in. Because that's probably Philip.
The way the principal dances around acknowledging that these two boys are both, at least in the world of the TV show, they're both Chinese. It's so uncomfortable. Not exactly subtle writing, but whatever. Is this a scene you can relate to?
Yeah, all through high school, I had teachers mysteriously ask me if I was related to so-and-so or if I was so-and-so's sister. I had no idea who these people were. I'd walk into grocery stores and people would say, oh, are you so-and-so's sister? No.
Oh, absolutely. So, and honestly, that's one of my favorite scenes from the show, honestly pulling it out. But yeah, I mean... you know, I think people just assume when they see two Asians in a room to some degree still that maybe they somehow know each other or, you know, their friends. Like, they, honestly, my partner, David, who's, you know, about 12 years younger than me, when we're out together, they always ask, you know, are you two brothers, you know, and things like that. And it's just like, you know, why would we be brothers just because we're both Asian? You know, it's still a familiar fact, I think, going on right now.
I had a question for you, Gina. I didn't read the article of Eddie Huang's objections to the show, so I was curious, since he is the narrator, did for the first season, did all of the narration, and obviously had a tremendous amount of influence on the show, why did he still feel like he didn't have the authority in his own product to steer it in the direction he wanted to?
Well, I think I don't want to make myself into the expert on this by any means. I do think part of the trouble had to do with screen adaptation, and he was not the screen adapter. And I think there were a lot of arguments about lines that he would read and lines that he wouldn't read, and that has a lot to do with why he didn't come back for the second season.
Got it.
But so back to this idea about kids in school. Is there anything that this show really misses about that experience?
Maybe it's the idea that Peter hit on a little bit ago, that you don't really realize what is happening around you necessarily. All you know is that some people will sit with you at lunch and some people won't.
Yeah.
It's that's because you're 11. That comes clear later. Right, right.
KCUR's Central Standard is off to a break. When we return, more on Fresh Off the Boat with the discussion heading toward the bamboo ceiling for Asian American professionals, not just on TV and in movies, but everywhere. I'm Gina Kaufman. Stay with us.
I figured it out, how the restaurant can attract bigger crowds.
What? How?
I need to hire a white host. Instead of people coming in and seeing a Chinese face and saying, huh? I thought this was an old West steakhouse. They see a white face and say, oh, hello, white friend. I am comfortable. See? Exactly. Not welcoming. That's why no to your face and yes to the white face.
That was a scene from TV's Fresh Off the Boat. Lewis, a restaurant owner, is talking to his wife. This moment provides a glimpse into one version of what it might be like for Asian Americans in business, but it might also be a sly reference to Asian American faces on television screens. Yes to the white face and no to your face. Fresh Off the Boat is the first network television show in a generation to feature an Asian American family. I'm Gina Kaufman, and this screen time discussion on KCUR's Central Standard is shifting gears to talk about what's been dubbed the bamboo ceiling. Our guests are lawyer Peter Chung, actress Andy Meyer, and our critic, Russ Simmons. Welcome back, guys.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Russ, talk to me about the history of Asian Americans on the screen, both in television and on film.
Well, 20 years ago, the last program that featured an Asian American family was Margaret Chow's All-American Girl, and it was featured a Korean American family. And the problem was that it didn't do well in the ratings. And, you know, nothing succeeds like success. And the show did not last. And so if it had hit, it would have been, you know, you'd probably seen a lineup of Asian American families on TV because the studios are not going to take chances. They want a sure thing. They are going out on a limb with Fresh Off the Boat. It's done well. So guess what? Ken Jeong has a new series starting soon called Dr. Ken. Ken Jeong is known probably best for the Hangover films and for the TV show Community. So he's going to be headlining a show. So it's like, if it works, they're going to run with it.
I don't know when everyone in this room grew up, but I'm guessing that a lot of us saw some 80s movies. Am I right here? I think I'm right. Okay. So thinking about characters who were very memorable and maybe a little disappointing on screen, but I'm curious about your responses. Characters like Data in The Goonies and it pains me just to say it, but Long Duck Dong and I think it was not Pretty in Pink. It was Pretty in Pink. Yes. So,
oh, 16 Candles.
16 Candles. That's right. Yeah. So, I mean, how did it affect you guys to see these characters as some of the primary representations of Asian Americans on screen?
Well, those two in particular, and I think the one who played Data also was in Indiana Jones Temple of Doom, if I remember correctly. So, unfortunately, whenever those movies came out, I would get a long and repeated quoting of those certain lines, you know, from Long Duck Dong, you know, hey, sexy lady, and, you know. And like,
so people would quote him to you?
Right. Well, you know, some of them were my friends, kind of joking or whatever, which is fine. But, you know, I would often hear those lines repeated to me, you know, and those types of things. So,
Andy, how did representations of Asian characters on screen affect you? Are there memorable presences or absences?
Well, one presence on screen that came up for me over and over again was Connie Chung. You look like Connie Chung. You're Connie Chung. And, you know, there I was, a 16-year-old with permed hair and, you know, my cheerleader's uniform. I did not see the resemblance at all, and I didn't get it, except for that she was the only Asian on screen, the only Asian female that anybody could point out. So,
that, do you think that a presence on screen or lack thereof can kind of limit people's imaginations, especially if you're talking about being like the only Asian in your class or one of three or something like that?
Absolutely, absolutely. There is, I can't remember her name, so I'm not even going to attempt, but she's an amazing Nigerian writer who did a TED Talk called The Danger of One Story. And in it, she talks about how what we're exposed to through the media, through writing, through arts on stage, if that only exposes us to one story or one character, that's all that we can create in our minds until we get that other input.
For actors, this has been a huge limitation. I mean, for another group, but Viola Davis just became the first ever African-American woman to win an Emmy for leading actress in a drama. And in her acceptance speech, she said, "The only thing that separates women from color from anyone else is opportunity. You cannot win an Emmy for roles that simply are not there."
Yeah, definitely. Unless people decide to cast non-traditionally, your story just isn't there to be told, and you would be the best person to tell that story, but it's not there, so you can't tell it.
Andy, as an actress, how has Kansas City's theater scene been for you? Have there been roles for you?
There have been. And I know a lot of the producers and directors around town really do make an effort to do some non-traditional casting, multicultural casting. I won't say colorblind casting.
What's the difference there?
Well, colorblind casting means you just cast anybody for any specific role. And then if you do that without really being conscious of it, or what we call color conscious casting, then you end up with some really weird situations that don't really make sense or don't maybe have a lot of artistic value.
What about offstage and production roles? One of Eddie Wong's critiques of the TV show Fresh Off the Boat is that the person who adapted his story for the screen isn't Chinese or Taiwanese, and he felt that contributed to his point of view getting kind of watered down. Is diversity off camera and off stage a problem in your field?
It's interesting. I definitely see more diversity off stage, behind the scenes, than I do on stage, or at least for Asian Americans in Kansas City.
Russ, what's been your perception of this in the world of TV and cinema?
As far as the inclusion or exclusion?
Yeah, and particularly off screen. Support roles isn't the right word for mm-hmm. it, but those invisible roles.
Right. I would have to say that one of the most highly respected and, potentially best filmmakers, American filmmakers, is Ang Lee, who is Taiwanese. And it obviously doesn't matter what his race is behind the camera. No one sees him, but he does this wide variety of topics and makes it all work. There are Asian people that are working in the business, but they're not in front of the camera because people tend to support stories about themselves. They want to see themselves on the screen. And so that's one of the reasons why there are so many, such a limitation of roles out there.
Peter, have you felt there's what's now being called a bamboo ceiling in your profession, the legal profession?
Sure. And again, I don't want to portray myself as an expert necessarily on this, but I think nationally, the studies are there. There's that whole talk about Asians being the model minority,
What does that mean?
I think generally means they're hardworking, but they're quiet. They don't raise a fuss, they try to, in a sense, blend in and not be seen. And hopefully their work speaks for them.
The good one.
Right. Right.
That's what that is.
The, quote, good minority. I think you see in the legal field, and this is mostly talking about the larger law firms around the country, our numbers are okay in terms of getting hired, in terms of turning over into equity partners, leaders of the firm. It's really, really bad.
What do you think explains that? Do you think there's a relationship between this quote unquote model minority concept and those really high level opportunities?
Sure. Well, again, I'm talking specific to the legal field. I think those qualities of fitting in, just going to your desk, doing your job, not complaining, they may be good for getting tasks done. They're not good for making a book a business, meeting people, getting clients. And that's really what drives the business, is you having your own book of business, your own clients, so you don't necessarily need to depend on other people. If you're just sitting at your desk, never complaining, never asking to go to these client meetings, never asking to do these things, that's just not going to happen. So I think that's a part of it.
You formed the Asian American Bar Association of Kansas City. You were one of the founders. What inspired that?
You know, honestly, it was just a little bit, mostly just a peer group. There's a group of Asian lawyers around town. There's actually about three or four of us who practice in St. Louis for a little bit. And they had just started an organization up over there about a year previously. And we had all, by happenstance, came back over here to, you know, to practice in Kansas City. So it's a peer group, support group. You know, there's not many of us type of things. Honestly, it's kind of funny. The way we formed our group is there's a local phone directory. So we went around calling people with Asian-sounding last names, which there's a few people's last name Lee who are not actually Asian. And again, we apologize for calling you incessantly about that. So,
well, do you think that having that association has been helpful, and have people – you were talking earlier about, like, more than one Asian in a group getting misidentified as family. Do you guys get misidentified as family when you meet?
Sure. Yeah. Oh, it happens all the time. I used to be on a national organization where, you know, we'd have meetings out of town. And if you know, I just happened to check in at the same time as an Asian female lawyer, they'd often assume, we're husband and wife just because, you know, we're an Asian couple or an Asian man and female showing up to check in at a hotel and
wow.
Things like that. So I think those are helpful because I think when you're in a business or a group or a law firm and you're the only Asian, it's hard to talk to other people about the issues because they may not understand them to the same degree you are. So it provides an outlet for them to just kind of ask, how do I do this? How do I go about this? So I think that's one of the more helpful things.
I want to switch back to talking about Fresh Off the Boat. Let's listen to Eddie Wong, whose memoir, again, is the basis for the television show. He's talking in this clip to Bill Maher about some of the issues we've been discussing, and he puts a really fine point on it.
I talk to kids, I go on Twitter, and I see their responses. And there's a lot of Asians out there that feel pressure to like the show. And they have issues with it. They see issues with it. But they don't want to say anything because they're like, we finally got invited to the party. We're
right.
Finally having reflections and representations of
but
ourselves.
But I feel like you wanted to break the stereotype. And then you got caught in the Hollywood mill and you found out, no. The Hollywood feels, no, it better to use the stereotypes. Is that what happened?
Yeah. I mean, they want to tell universal white stories with yellow faces, black faces, brown faces, but they tell the same universal story. And you go watch how these sitcoms are made in writers' rooms. They're like labs, dude. It's like GMO food
right,
they're making.
Right.
First of all, do you guys feel pressure to like this show?
I don't know. I mean, I just do. I think it's a
since you do, it's
really
hard to know.
Yeah, I think it's a really good thing, and I think it's important. I don't know, maybe I feel like I'm pressuring people to like the show because it is such an important event.
I actually did feel pressure to like the show because of the reason we talked about. It's the first one in 20 years. And honestly, the first three or four episodes, I focused more on what I thought was wrong with the show than just watching the show. You know, and it took a while to say, okay, they're just TV characters, just watch the show. I mean,
Russ, what do we know about this, how shows like this are made? What's the GMO analogy? I assume he's referring to focus groups and that kind of thing.
Sure. And also this, the nature of the writer's room where they're throwing up ideas. And if it's controversial, it's okay only if it can get a belly laugh. Because, you know, they have these beats that they have to meet. You know, you can't go so long without a laugh line. And so they're throwing all this stuff in. They're just throwing it against the wall and see what sticks.
Central Standard will be right back on KCUR. When we get back, we want you to join in at 816-235-2888. Can a TV show or movie serve both a specific community and a general audience? Or do you have to decide who a show is for? I'm Gina Kaufman. Stay tuned. And that number again, 816-235-2888. Good morning. It's a Friday, and we're getting caught up on Fresh Off the Boat, which is just entering its second season on ABC. I'm Gina Kaufman, and you're listening to Central Standard on KCUR. Our guests are Peter Chung, Andy Meyer, and Russ Simmons. And we've got some calls, so I'm going to go ahead and turn to Nathan in Kansas City at 816-235-2888. Nathan, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. How about you?
I'm all right. Not too shabby.
What can you share?
Well, you guys keep saying that this has been the only Asian show in 20 years, but there is Sullivan and Son that ran for 2 years.
Tell us more about that show. I don't remember it.
Yeah, it was based around a guy who quit his corporate job to go help out his parents at a bar in Pittsburgh. So his dad was, I guess, Irish-American, and who married a Korean woman, and they had a boy and a girl. And so this is, I mean, they're not, it's not where, you know, it's showing the kids at a young age, so they're adults now, but still it's centered around that, you know, Asian American family, and, you know, with some, you know, cultural, you know, ideas put in there and everything, but, and centered around, you know, they're working at a bar. So, I mean, it only lasted 2 years. I guess the ratings weren't good enough. I watched it a few times, but...
Did you like it?
Yeah, I mean, it was okay. It was okay, but I wasn't overly excited about it.
Okay. So. Well, thanks so much. You know, that's interesting because, yeah, all of the press around this show has been, this is the first one in 20 years. Does anyone else remember Sullivan and Son?
I heard about it. I did not see it. I don't know what network that was on. Was that like on TNT or what was that on? I don't know that it was on one of the major.
Yeah, I think that's my memory too. I do remember the commercials for it. I don't remember ever watching it. And I think being a lawyer and wordsmithing, I think it's the first show based on a, quote, Asian American family, I guess, if they're encompassing the whole unit versus parts of it.
So, I don't know. It's too bad that Sullivan Son didn't get more press, though. Right. Yeah.
And network versus non-network might be a component of this. Mm-hmm. Russ, are there any performances in Fresh Off the Boat that are worth noting?
Well, I think all of the actors acquit themselves well. Again, this is a otherworldly situation that they're in. The dialogue doesn't necessarily lend itself to credibility. You know, it's a laugh line, and if they can handle the laugh lines well, then it works. And generally they do. And these are also very likable people. They have people that you'd want to hang around with. You know, earlier I said that. People want to see themselves on the screen, and that's one of the reasons why there aren't more Asian Americans on the screen, because largely the audience is white. To me, in a way, that's a sad state of affairs, because what you want to do is try to take a person that's different and see if you can put yourself into their shoes. And that's what this show is doing. I think the mistake that they may be making is they're trying to make it too relatable. And they're trying to make it to a point where, they're just like everybody else.
Peter, you were just asking a question over the break about the role of the monologue in expressing Asian-ness.
Yeah, and I was going to direct this maybe to Russ. It seems like in the early episodes specifically, some of the monologues cover some of the characteristics that I feel, you know, are with Asian-American families. Like, I remember at one point, Eddie monologues, you know, that's how our family deals with each other. We eat our emotions and don't speak about things. Mm-hmm. It seems like a lot of times... Some of the points that, you know, I would prefer they make subtly, you know, just say over and over, the family stares at each other, walks away, something like that, they just kind of blurt out, which kind of, I don't know, takes away the effect to the show to some degree to me. I just wonder if you had any thoughts on that.
Yeah, I agree with you. I understand what you're saying. And they will say things that they would never say, and that says something completely different. For example, they know that there's something hidden, something that somebody's lying about when they say, I love you, because the family doesn't say that. You know, they make it a point of if they actually blurt that out, then there's something else that they're trying to hide. You know, and that, to me, that's a kind of a smart observation.
Yeah. And we were just also, Andy, you wanted to bring up something about food and maybe the different kinds of food and what that represents on the show and in the larger world.
Well, yeah, they've made that point a couple of times. We were talking about the mac and cheese, and then the first day Eddie's at school, he brings his mom's food to school and is ridiculed because of it. The mom makes her stinky tofu, and most people turn their noses up at it. And that I have to say, that's something that really rings true. And I know that in the news in the last couple of years, the idea of food and food offerings at elementary schools, the idea of being conscious of the student population's cultures has been labeled as racist. And PB&J has been called racist. So that's an interesting topic to think about.
Well, and it does seem also that as a lot of foods that people used to refer to as ethnic foods have become more mainstream in America, that I've read an article about what it feels like to have the food that people used to make fun of you for, that very likely some of those same people are like, oh, hey, have you tried the new, like, Korean barbecue or whatever? Like, is that something that is an uncomfortable sort of thing?
I guess I don't know if it's uncomfortable. I'm glad it's happening, honestly. You know, that's because honestly, food can be a doorway to a lot of things, other cultures. You know, if you like the food, it's easier to hang out there. You know, you're willing to learn more about things. So I think food's a great gateway, and I'm glad it's kind of happening, this food revolution.
Let's talk to Matt in Baldwin City. Hi, Matt.
Hey, I've been listening to the conversation, and it's a very interesting one. You folks mentioned that there was a you know, like a character very far back in TV history, and I think I thought of one, an Asian character who was predated the one that you had mentioned. And there was a character in a TV series called The Courtship of Eddie's Father that was broadcast between 1969 and 1972. I remember watching it, and the nanny in a household comprised of a single father and raising his son, he was a widower, the character of the nanny was played by an Asian woman, and she was, a very important part of the plot. And I think the plot arc seemed to center around the son wanting the father to be married, and you know, she was the Asian woman who was the nanny was sort of always overlooked, sort of stupidly by the character played by Bill Bixby.
And this is 1960s, is that right?
Yes, it was in 1969. It premiered in 1969.
And, let's see. Russ Simmons, our critic, is nodding vigorously.
Yes, I'm old enough to remember. But, you know, that was a cute show based on a book, based on a movie. And I'm trying to remember the actress's name. She's an Academy Award-winning actress. I can't think of her name off the top of my head. I'll have to look it up real quick. But yes, she was a central character and a major influence on this little boy's life. And that was a sitcom that was handled in a much more realistic way than they do with Fresh Off the Boat.
Hey, Russ, I was wondering if I could interject with a question.
Sure.
You mentioned Dr. Ken's coming out.
Yes.
Do you anticipate that's going to be looked at through the same critical perspective that Fresh Off the Boat has been?
Sadly, yes. I mean, I think it's just one of those things where it's right now, you know, the spotlight is on them, the microscope, is this going to work? Can we exploit this and create more shows with Asian characters that will be successful? And they're going to look at it as an Asian American character. They're not going to look at it as a character.
By they, do you mean the network people?
The network people, okay. Yes. Uh-huh.
In a way, I mean, it seems like that the show that, if there were a show that were more directly or maybe authentically based on Eddie Wong's personal experience, that would be a different show.
Absolutely.
And also a cool show, but it would probably not be able to be on a network just because
right.
of some of the dark content. But
you know, one of the things, Gina, that they're doing in the networks is they're not just looking at the overall audience numbers. They're looking at specific demographics, and what they want to appeal to is a very young audience. And so even if they get huge audiences of senior citizens, they're not interested in appealing to that audience. What they want to do, and that's one of the reasons why this show has a character who's in, you know, junior high as one of its leading characters, and a very young family. They want to appeal to that young audience. And Ken Jeong, known for, as I said, the Hangover movies, edgy, irreverent, and young. He's not particularly young himself, but he appeals to a young audience.
And it's also worth it to mention that recently Margaret Cho has been cast as Ken's sister.
Ah, didn't know that.
And I guess when I was asking you earlier, I think from the socioeconomic perspective, I think that show is probably going to get more of a break since it's not based on someone's historical material. And Ken Jeong's already got a large presence, as you
right.
mentioned. You know, everyone
mm-hmm.
remembers him as, you know, the naked guy jumping out the trunk and all that kind of other stuff. So, you know,
right.
I just don't think it's going to be looked at the same prism as this show will be. That's just my own personal opinion.
Yeah, compared to itself and not to a memoir that already exists.
Right.
Well, and yeah, I mean, we're just entering season two. Any quick responses to what you're seeing so far in season two? Liking it? Anything different?
It seems the same to me. The only difference, obviously, is we're not getting that narration. So it would be interesting to see how that plays out over the next few episodes.
Our time is up for this morning's Screen Time treatment of Fresh Off the Boat. If you haven't been watching, give it a try and tweet us your review. We're at KCURCST. Critic Russ Simmons, thanks so much as always.
Always good to be with you.
And lawyer Peter Chung of the firm Benton, Lloyd & Chung, it's been a pleasure.
Oh, it's been a great pleasure for me. Thank you for having me.
Andy Meyer, thanks for taking the time.
My pleasure. Thank you very much.
Andy is producing artistic director for Pan-Asian American Artists of Kansas City. You can listen back to this discussion about Fresh Off the Boat at kcur.org/centralstandard later today. KCUR's Central Standard is produced by Matthew Long Middleton and Sylvia Maria Gross, with heavy lifting from Suzanne Hogan, and Fridays by Jen Chen. We get help from contributor Andrea Tudhope and intern Kyle Smith. Our music is by Spoonbender Labs. Linda Scher runs the board for us every day. I'm Gina Kaufman. Have a great weekend.
You've been listening to Central Standard on KCUR and KCUR HD1, Kansas City Public Media. Stay with us for Up to Date, coming up next. Today on KCUR's Science Friday, why generic doesn't always mean cheaper when it comes to prescription drugs. We'll have that plus much more on Science Friday today between 2 and 4 on KCUR 89.3. Central Standard is supported by the UMKC Conservatory of Music and Dance, presenting the Conservatory Orchestra, featuring music by Berlioz and Prokofiev, Friday, October 9th at 7:30 in White Reception.